What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host, and back with us again this week and next is really one of my favorite guests, Preston Beckman. Now, he was the former head of scheduling for NBC back during the must-see TV era when people actually watched NBC. Also was the head of scheduling for Fox during the American Idol era, and currently he is a media consultant. This week, we're going to talk about what's going on with broadcast networks, the new policy to cut way back on pilots, how come there are 17 CSIs on the air and very little comedy, what is considered a good number these days for the networks, how the networks are competing against streamers. So a lot of interesting topics to discuss. Then next week, we're going to get into cable networks and streamers. But this is part one with Preston Beckman this week on Hollywood and Levine. Well, Preston, let's start with the broadcast networks. I noticed this year that there are very, very few pilots, and this seems to be a ploy that every 10 years or so, one of the networks will say, what do we need pilots for? We're spending all this money for pilots and shows that don't get on the air, and a year or two later, they go back to the conventional wisdom of pilots. Why is it that there are so few pilots considering the alternative?
Well, I think there are two reasons. One is most shows now, most scripted shows, are based on IP. So, in other words, if
intellectual property.
Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. So, if you're going to go to Dick Wolf and say, give me a third FBI or give me a fourth FBI or give me another NCIS, you pretty much know what you're going to get at CBS. You know, I don't know if they tested it, but Elsbeth is, you know, a spinoff of The Good Wife. So
right.
You know the character. So I think that one of the reasons is that because of the auspices and because the pilot is simply another version of five things that are already on the air, the networks may feel, well, why bother? Because, you know, I know what I'm going to get. So therefore I'll save the money on the pilot. That's, the biggest reason. And then the other reason is the notion that, I mean, it was even the case when I was in the business is that executives go, well, I put on high testing pilots and they fail. Or I put on poor testing pilots and they've succeeded. And as I'm sure I've told you before, a high testing pilot doesn't guarantee success. A very, very low testing pilot is doomed to fail. I've never seen a low testing pilot succeed. So some of it is the arrogance of the executives thinking that they know better than the viewer. When I was at Fox and I had research reporting to me, we felt that pilot testing wasn't about telling the programming executives to pick up a show or not pick up a show, but rather we approached it as you're picking up everything. So let us tell you what the testing has told us needs to be fixed in order for this to have a better chance of succeeding. So we would never recommend picking up something or not. And, you know, sometimes we would test a pilot and we would give them a shopping list of 15 or 20 things. We say, you don't fix these things, it's not going to work. And which is our way of saying this is not going to work. And
Right.
so
But it
that.
seems to me that you're limiting your options by having so few pilots. You don't have 10 pilots and two slots, so you have things to choose from. Now it's like you got two pilots and one slot, and what if both pilots are terrible?
Well, you put one on the air. You put the least terrible one on the air. I know what you're saying. I mean, when I first came out for pilot screening, it would take 5 days, and we would screen about six or seven pilots a day. And I remember at NBC, I was still in research and came out to Burbank for pilot screening. And I remember the CFO of the company telling me that Brandon Tartikoff would make so many pilots so that by the end of the week, you could not remember what you had seen, and he would just put on what he wanted to put on. So it's a lot different now. I think a lot of it is cost saving. A lot of it is doing what I'm sure the streamers and some of the cable networks do, is not doing pilots. But as I said, I think that and there are also fewer spots for scripted programming on a schedule.
That's true.
So you don't need as much. I look every morning, I still look at the overnight ratings, and it's very rare that all four networks are running scripted programming. There's usually a lot of unscripted on the
Well,
air.
let's circle back to the IP, because you're right. Now networks will have like a block of Chicago Fire, Chicago Dog Catcher, Chicago Crossing Guard. Well, normally what happens is a popular show over time runs out of steam, and so the network has to fill an hour or a half hour with something new. But if people start getting tired of the Chicago Dog Watcher franchise, now all of a sudden you have to replace 3 hours of programming. And if you don't have a lot of pilots and a lot of options, what do you do? It's like, yeah, you're right. You can keep doing Law and Order as long as Law and Orders continue to be successful, but at some point they're going to run out of gas and you got nothing left.
Well, you moved to a different city. No,
CSI
seriously, I think,
Pittsburgh.
yeah, I mean, look, let me give Dick Wolf his props. I mean, television is television. Somebody commits a crime, somebody catches them, somebody prosecutes them, and that's it. It's it, this television is pretty simple. I mean, for most viewers, they just want to be entertained for it. They want to be told a good story, generally with a beginning and a middle and an end. And the people, especially someone like Dick Wolf, just knows how to do it. And even if one of the Chicagos fails, they spin something off from the other two. And people go, okay, well, there seems to be an unlimited amount of pleasure in watching these shows. I don't think that any of the networks feel that these shows are running out of gas. And if anything, all they'll do is take that formula, even if it's not with Dick Wolf, take the formula and just start it again, in some way. And I think a lot of development now is IP centric, in the sense that even if this isn't on the air, I see it as a way to begin building a franchise, a new franchise, as opposed to this is a totally standalone show. And to be honest, these stacking the three shows together seems to work. I mean, it's working on several nights. So in the world of broadcast television, which generally appeals to a relatively older audience, this is what they like. And ironically, I think that when you look at some of the streamers, their biggest successes are either replicating those kind of shows or putting those shows on the air. I mean, taking the old versions and repurposing them. So, television's always been a lot simpler than we make it out to be. I remember Don Oldmeyer, when we would hear pitches for shows, would talk about why executives felt they needed to add more degrees of difficulty to a show. Make it simple, beginning, middle, and end, and you have your show.
We always thought that when we were writing pilots was like one simple story. That's enough. Don't have three subplots and 17 characters and have the audience just completely confused. Try to dazzle them. It's just like keep it very simple. Well, here's something that I find kind of ironic with network development. For a long time, writers would flee the broadcast networks in favor of streamers because they had, quote unquote, more freedom and they could do a wider range of shows. And I think the strike certainly helped in this regard. I think a lot of writer creators are open to going back to the networks because, at least on a broadcast network, you have the opportunity of having a hit, a long-running show, and partial ownership. Whereas if you do a show for Netflix, unless you're on a Shonda Rhimes mega deal, you're basically just hired to produce content. So now, when more people are willing to go back to the networks, the networks are less enthusiastic about seeing them.
Well, again, I think they don't need as much. There are also networks are now part of a larger ecosystem. So I think when they evaluate a pitch or a show, I don't think they're just evaluating it as how th is this worth putting on our network, as much as it's what is the afterlife? What's the value for the larger corporation? Is this something that we eventually will, I mean, more and more shows now go drop on the network and the next day they're being streamed. Or are these shows that we can sell to Netflix in 3 or 4 years, and Netflix will make them appear to be new to the millions and millions of people who have no idea that these shows existed, as was the case with Suits. So I think that there are a lot of decisions that go into these shows. And even though writers might want to come back to the networks, they're not coming back to a network. They're coming back to a larger entity that's still focused on how this show can be distributed in a variety of ways.
It also must be a little tougher in terms of programming and scheduling now that you can't just fill the summer with reruns the way you used to, because, like you say, a show airs and all of a sudden it winds up on other platforms. So for the summer and everything else, you need new programming.
Right, and that's mostly unscripted. ABC does a lot of game shows. You'll see again, you see different versions of shows that are successful, like what's Deal or No Deal Island, whatever, which is kind of, I guess, ripping off Survivor in some way. I mean, so you see again, more and more of television is I know what this is. I've heard of this. I've watched other versions of it. I'm not necessarily looking for something new, or I'm looking more for maybe a different variation on something I've already seen. You're seeing more and more shows being revived, Night Court, even Shogun. I mean, ironically, when I started at NBC in 1980, they had just aired the miniseries of
Right,
Shogun.
right.
So,
Which, by the way, the new version, people, is 1,000 times better than that NBC
oh,
version that you guys ran years ago.
I'm sure I have not watched it, but my daughter has made it abundantly clear I need to watch it. So I mean, it's all kind of come full circle. I mean, every day I look at the, if I look at the Hollywood Reporter or Variety, I mean, there's at least one or two articles about something being revived.
Right.
And so there's not a lot of original thinking going on right now.
Don't you think, though, in the long run that you're kind of mortgaging your future? I mean, one of the things about television that was always so great is that that was an opportunity for new shows and new stars to come along. Do networks even think anymore that they can produce a breakout hit? Do they think that they could somehow come upon the next Cosby, the next ER, and all of a sudden it's like it's gonna really boost things for them? Or are they just resigned to the fact that, nah, if a thing gets 2 million viewers a week, we're happy?
Well, honestly, if you look at network ratings, which they've now added another, I think it's up to the thousandth now. It used to cut off at the 100th, now it's kind of go off at the thousandth. If you look at ratings, I mean, even something that's considered successful in 18 to 49 viewers, maybe best case you can get a 0.6 or 0.7. Sometimes, an award show might go up into the ones. I mean, it's hard to see how a broadcast network, with all the ways in which that program will be repurposed immediately, including just recording it and watching it, the next day or whatever, it's hard to see how a broadcast network can create a show that's going to go higher than maybe a 1.2, 1.5 range. That would be considered a mega hit now. And if you look at what on the broadcast networks, probably the closest thing that's been defined as a hit recently was Abbott Elementary. And I think maybe at its peak, it was at a 0.5 or a 0.6. I just don't know. I'm not saying that networks wouldn't want one. I don't know how it's possible. And there's just so much.
Right.
There's so much to consume that, it's an onslaught. It used to be here's four networks and it's 9 o'clock on Tuesday night and here are my four choices. And, that's not the case anymore. And then when you throw in, live sports to the mix, it's just, I just don't know. I would love to believe it is, but I just don't know if it's ever possible to create the kind of shows that we had, or you might create them, but will you get ratings like the shows that we had when I was at NBC or even at Fox?
I mean, I remember when I was a kid and it would be election time, and like the Sunday before the November election, this fringe candidate, Lyndon LaRouche,
I remember that.
would buy time on a network and would have like an hour just spouting his views from America.
Yes.
And back in those days, he would get like a 2 share or something, and everyone laughed that no one ever watched this guy. Well, now Lyndon LaRouche would have the number one show in America.
I remember that, Ken. We're about the same age. I do remember that. You see where it got him.
Yeah,
Got
exactly.
him mentioned on a podcast.
What about the state of comedy?
Ooh.
Yeah, I think you just answered the question with one word.
Wow. I think, wow. There have been so many. Here's one of the problems I've always believed. I remember talking about this at Fox. There's been so many great comedies historically that would people rather watch repeats of Frasier than anything that's on television now? The Office, Seinfeld. I mean, there's so many great comedies and comedies today. I mean, I can't think of anything that comes close to those. And there's also been, in my opinion, an attempt to say to go, I don't care if it's funny. It's a comedy, but I don't believe funny is the way to evaluate this half hour. I mean, there's a lot of merger between dramas and comedies now, so I don't even know sometimes what a comedy is. And as you well know, the laugh track is pretty much gone away. So, wow, I always believe that if Castle Rock or Sony just packaged 22 episodes of Seinfeld and sold it to a network, it would get a bigger rating than any comedy that's on the air.
Yeah,
So.
that's interesting. I think that the execution of the current comedies is just not up to par. And it's easy to compare when you have the current Night Court, which is a faint carbon of the original, or even Frasier, with a whole different staff of writers who aren't as skilled as the original writers. So, and I'm thinking to myself, just as in my day, they were really good comedy writers. Yeah, there were a lot of bad sitcoms, but there were also Taxi and Cheers and Norman Lear and whatever. It's like there has to be an equal number of really good young comedy writers, but I guess they're just not getting the chance.
And again, it's how do you break out? How do you get a large enough audience for these comedies? And the networks are relying less and less on them. CBS used to have, a four comedy night historically on Monday, and NBC had its classic, must-see TV Thursday or must-see TV Tuesday, and every night of the week. There's just very few slots now for these comedies. And again, IP. I mean, the Big Bang Theory begat Young Sheldon. I think
Right.
there's another Ghosts comedy in the works. So it's always easier to go with what's familiar. And I think Young Sheldon's now going to
Yeah,
spin
there's going to
off.
be a spin-off of Young Sheldon as well.
So it's just, I think if you're a network executive and somebody gives you a choice between a pre-sold property, with some auspices, and something new and different, I think it's a no-brainer what you're going to do. I mean, it,
I thought it was interesting. The show NBC premiered called Extended Family,
yes.
which was a very standard kind of retro multi-camera comedy. And it began with 10 million people watching it, and it is down to 2.4 million. And to me, what that suggests is that there is an appetite for comedy, that people are willing to sample a show. But if it's bad, which extended family is, then they're going to flee in droves.
Well,
But if you gave them a good one, what if you gave them a show that began with 10 million that people liked and told their friends, and all of a sudden in 6 months or a year, it's getting 15 million people instead of two.
I could be wrong, but I think extended family was put in a time slot where for the premiere, where it inherited a large audience, I think. I don't think 10 million people just showed up.
May yeah, that
And
may be true. That may be true. But again, if you have this show called Seinfeld that you want to premiere, and it's your Super Bowl year, then throw it on.
Well, two things. Well, first of all, I never, when I was in scheduling, never advocated, or rarely advocated putting on an established show behind. I'll take that back. I never advocated launching a show behind the Super Bowl because my philosophy was, if something sucks, you're just showing it to everybody quicker. So
Right.
I was always a believer in, taking your established shows and putting them on behind the Super Bowl, because if you made that decision before you went to New York and announced your schedule and announced that, and you had the Super Bowl that year, and you announced that show in the upfront, that was a license to print money. The most lucrative night in my career at NBC was when we put a 1 hour episode of Friends on.
Yeah, right. And you had
That
Julia Roberts on as a guest and everything.
right
Yeah.
right and the year be and Marcel the Monkey, and the year before,
Oh, well, that's worth another
that's
15
what
million
did
people
it.
right there.
I remember the year before, I think it was ABC put on some kind of rescue launch some kind of rescue show behind the Super Bowl, and then the first episode in its regular time period completely bombed out. And I remember sitting at a meeting with the top execs at NBC, and I said, why are we doing this when we can put our hit shows behind the Super Bowl and make a fortune, make a lot of money? And I always did it, but at Fox also, we would put Glee, we put House, Simpsons. We would always put established shows behind the Super Bowl, announce them in the upfront, and ka-ching.
Well, CBS this year seems to be doing so well that they've had shows on the bubble that were actually performing better than hit shows on other networks. And they've had to cancel, like, So Help Me Todd and CSI Vegas. Both of those shows, like I said, if they were on ABC or NBC, they would be getting renewed already.
Well, look, CBS historically, I have a lot of respect for them, and I've gotten to know Amy Reisenbach, and I think she's a really talented executive. But CBS, of all the networks, has kind of said, we have a playbook, the pages are yellowed, but we're going to stick to our knitting. We know who we are, we know what our audience likes. And every time we deviate from that, we get slapped. We get slapped back. I mean, I remember when they 1 year they put on a musical hour, a drama with music about Las Vegas, and they put on a show about swingers. And both of them lasted like less than half a season or
Oh, I
something.
remember both of those shows. It was
Yes,
like
right.
Las Vegas. You had Hugh Jackman, I think, was in that show, and
I
it
think
still
you might be
bombed.
right. And
And
yeah.
the other was like Boomtown or
No, it
something.
was Swingers. It was a historical drama. I mean, it was about a community where people, were sharing partners, and neither of which was a CBS show. And sure enough, and I remember when they put them on, I remember telling everybody these shows are not going to work because the CBS viewer has a very, very, very specific taste. And as long as they stick to what works for them, I mean, they've been extremely patient with their unscripted shows. Survivor's been on for Survivor outlived American Idol on Fox, and Amazing Race is still on the air. So they're very they know they're very conservative in adding anything that isn't pre-sold. And I think it's working. Once in a while, like with a show like Ghosts, they do come up with something a little different, and then
But
that's
even
what gets.
Ghosts was just an adaptation of a British show
Yes,
that was successful.
right.
So even
But
their original show was an original.
that's good point. Good point. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, after the writers' strike, I think they were airing the British version, and I
I
think they
think so
were
too, yeah.
an NCIS in Australia or something. But that's, I think that they know who they are. They stack up these shows. They have always subscribed to the Big Ten theory of television. It's get everybody. And if you get everybody, you will get your 18 to 49, 25, 54 audience. And they're not trying to win Emmys. They're not trying to impress anybody. They're just trying to keep their network alive.
And there you go. That is part one of my two-part interview with Preston Beckman, who is a media consultant and at one time was the head of scheduling for NBC when people actually watched NBC. Same story with Fox. Now, next week, we get into cable networks. We talk about the Emmys, and we also talk about the current state of streamers. So you're going to want to come back for that. Our thanks, as always, to Adam and Susie Meister Butler, to John Wolfert, Howard Hoffman, Bruce and Jason Miller. If you want to get in touch with me, my email address is HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. That's HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. Also on Instagram, Hollywood and Levine, trying to reach that pinnacle of 3 million, and I think I'm up to 1650. Maybe 1653. Come on, people. You're falling behind. Anyway, part two coming up with Preston Beckman next week, right here on
Hollywood and Levine.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader, too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro. Cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.